Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Hello again. Our guest again this week is Philip Chan. We got involved with a great conversation with Philip about his new book called Final Bow for Yellow Face and perhaps changing the face of classical ballet around the world at various ballet companies, starting with and including the New York City Ballet. Philip is back with us to tell us a little more about how that idea of yellow face and changing the image of Chinese or Asian people on stage has morphed into an actual movement. So, Philip, welcome back to China America Radio. And when we left off last week, Philip was having a great conversation with New York City Ballet director Peter Martins. And what happened after that?
So leaving that meeting with Peter Martins, I called Gina and I said, I think Peter Martins is going to change the Nutcracker. And so if Peter Martins, who has this, you know, conservative, highly licensed ballet, is willing to change, why not every other company in America? So we both have busy day jobs, so it's not like we could call everybody. So it was really thinking of a strategy that would convince just the few key people, the few key gatekeepers who are doing the biggest Nutcracker productions, convince them that, hey, have a second think about this issue. It's not that you're racist. Maybe you just haven't thought too hard because you're inheriting a production that was done the year before. So it's not malintent, but let's think about this in a slightly different way now. And what we found was a lot of companies around the country were already having this conversation. So it's not like we started the conversation. We were merely consolidating a lot of conversations and helping companies figure out good ways to talk about this and good ways to update their specific production in order to be more inclusive. So this past year, it spread across the planet. We had a lot of companies in the UK and Australia start to sign as well. So I think this is really powerful in places where Chinese people are in the minority. So this work is not important for the Hong Kong Ballet or for the National Ballet of China. This is important in places like Birmingham in the UK, where it's the Asian population is one of the fastest growing populations. And they, you know, in order to be a part of that community and to be welcome, especially right now with everything that's happening with COVID, we need to make sure that the people we're putting on stage representing them are three-dimensional and not flat caricatures.
What is your intention on drilling down to the non-professional level with this thought process?
Yeah, well, I think that this conversation, once we've gotten the top gatekeepers, and right now we've got pretty much every major American ballet company with the highest budgets, and most, you know, most dancers, biggest professional companies to sign on board to this. So it's a conversation. It's the standard bearer. So if you're a teacher, whether you're at the finest academy in the biggest city or in the smallest town training dancers, which is where a lot of our professional dancers come from, they don't come from necessarily the big cities, but they come from small rural places and then, you know, move to these larger companies. There is, and we're already seeing a trickle-down effect with this. So if they're saying, I have to prepare my students because I want them to get a job with San Francisco Ballet or New York City Ballet or the Joffrey Ballet, what work do I need to do as an educator for my room full of 10-year-olds to get them to that standard? And part of that is looking at what these companies are doing. So a movement like ours is saying, okay, if now as a field, American dance companies are collectively deciding that we're not going to do yellowface anymore, that smaller communities still want to do have a rich cultural life. And they definitely are looking to see what is going on, what's happening in the field, and what are the best practices that even though I'm not in New York City, what do I need to do to make the best art? And so there has been a trickle-down effect, which I think is only positive for the art form.
Our guest on Spectrum this week is Philip Chan. Philip is the author of a new book that just came out called Final Bow for Yellow Face. We're talking about that, particularly in relevance to the ballet community as well. Where do you see the trajectory of your movement going, and what would be some benchmarks that you would consider important along the way?
A lot of the classical repertory, the canon, contains representations of people from other cultures. What do we do with that? What's the solution there? We can't just throw out all of these great works. You know, it would just be silly to say, well, we can't do Madama Butterfly and Turandot anymore. you know, because of the overall uncomfortable dynamic that it presents. So what are ways to keep that alive? And I think the solution that I found in my work is that inclusion is the answer to a lot of the cultural appropriation answers. So if you're doing a production of Madame a Butterfly, hire a Japanese director, hire a Japanese costume designer, you know, hire a crew that will take this work and reclaim some ownership and tell it a story in a way that they that feels more has more authenticity for them as people. And I think that we're starting to have those conversations, but I think arts organizations have sometimes used the excuse of saying, oh, well, we do colorblind casting, and that's why our Madame a Butterfly is white, because she just happened to be the best singer. But, you know, it's colorblind casting. You know, I just don't think that that's a good enough answer anymore. David Henry Hwang talks about colorful casting, which is like actually saying, oh, if she's supposed to be a Japanese woman, let's hire a Japanese woman.
What's in your future? I mean, could you be one of those choreographers or directors at some point?
So I'm working on a production with Doug Fullington. He's, along with Alexei Romansky, who I mentioned before, he's one of the other great stagers of this classical petit-pas ballet. This classical ballet. So we're looking at a ballet called La Bayadère. There's a couple other Orientalist ballets. And we're talking about restaging La Bayadère, which takes place in exotic India. It's a sort of a classic love triangle melodrama. We're talking about staging our version in 1930s Hollywood, but keeping all of the classical steps. So instead of exotic temple dancers, they're shooting a country western picture, and they're going to be cowgirls doing the same steps, but it's just making it about us instead of them. So thinking about what is exotic in America today, well, probably a different time period. Maybe the future is exotic, like the Jetsons or the Flintstones. Those are exotic people and times, but they're also Americans. We identify with them. So how could we take this ballet, La Bayadère, which is based in exotic India, it's a fairy tale, how can we make it about us instead of them? And so that's the question that we're asking. So we're looking at a few of these old Russian ballets and asking that similar question. So that's sort of what's next on the creative front.
And let's hope that we have theaters and stages and places for people to go see anything at some point, even if we have to sit at arm's length from each other.
I mean, unfortunately, the reality is a ballet like, you know, a restaging of La Bayadère, for example, could be like $5 million. You know, that's a huge amount of money for a ballet company, especially now post-COVID, to raise in order to make that happen. So it's the ideas in the book are one thing that's easy to just write down and put on paper, but to actually demonstrate them in person with live people, it's quite a little bit harder to actually illustrate. So in practice.
Now, people can be interactive and proactive by going on your website and can actually sign something. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, so if people go to yellowface.org, they can read more information about the pledge, sign the pledge, which will get you on our mailing list. And then you can also get my book at yellowface.org/book. There's a little blurb there. I also gave a sort of a virtual book launch party with the Museum of Chinese in America. So we raised over $2,500 for their sort of fire recovery fund earlier this year. So there's a clip to my virtual book launch. You can hear me read a section of the book. You can pick it up for Kindle, for Nook, and for your Apple books. And a hardcover version is going to come out later this year.
Yeah, the book has a subtitle as well, which I find interesting.
The title of the book is Final Bow for Yellowface, Dancing Between Intention and Impact. And that's really because that's really the approach when I talk to dance companies about their work. So, you know, if I said, well, hey, you're doing something racist, you're racist, your response would be, well, no, I'm not, because I lived in Japan for 4 years. I love cooking Mexican food, and my cousin's black, so I'm not racist. So then you dismiss anything, you know, I have to say or any criticism after. Whereas if I say to you, you know, your work, I know you're intending it to come across as this way, but are you realizing that maybe Asian people, to Asian people, this lands over here instead of over here? So your intention doesn't match the impact of the work. How does that make you feel? And most artists, when they're trying to express something, they want to say what they mean to say. And so they would be horrified to learn that what they were trying to say was actually something heard a different way. So that gives you the opportunity within that space to actually have a constructive and positive conversation, as opposed to feeling ashamed or embarrassed and shutting it down. So the book really tries to help people who are also maybe just uncomfortable having conversations about race and navigating it. This is hard work if you're not used to it. Can I wear this beautiful sari that I wore to my friend's wedding? Can I wear it out again in public? Am I allowed to serve this kind of food at this kind of occasion? All of these questions, can I wear this costume for Halloween? We come against these questions all the time. And this book really helps people answer the questions of like, okay, where are the lines? How do I think about this? Not just to not offend people, but to make sure that my intention of why I'm doing something matches the impact.
And for people who actually are into or subscribers to ballet companies, wherever that happens to be, you do have a lot of benchmarks along the way in the book, where you know your business and you know the people in it. And so it's got some great references and some great occasions that sort of fueled your interest and your progress in this regard. So we want to thank you for that. And anything parting you'd like to say before we clam up here for the day?
I would just say check out the book if you want to learn more. I talk a lot about what it means to be an American and have an American approach to making this work, and how we have these art forms like opera and ballet that came from Europe. How do we make them truly American so that everybody feels included and belongs? So that's sort of one of the larger questions that may be worth asking, especially if you're Chinese American and you're questioning, what is my place here in America? How do I belong and how do I fit in? This book roars in a good way.
Your book is very timely at lighting a fire under some other issues. But again, Philip, thank you so much for joining us on China America Radio. Let's touch base again at some point and see where we are. Okay, bye, Philip. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.